those that don't know me, I'm Phil Rankin, and Eli, my son, is in the high school group, and my wife Sue back here, and she's a kindergarten teacher at Damascus Christian. And I have had experience in ministry for a long time, and just to give you some of my background of how did we come out with Phil doing this lesson on worship, because I'm not a worship pastor. I was a youth pastor, but I grew up in a Christian home. I got saved at an early age. I believe I was 9. I remember praying to receive the Lord after listening to a sermon at an evangelical free church in Huntington Beach, California, and listening to the pastor give the gospel presentation in the sermon, going home and asking my dad, based upon what I heard in the sermon, how do you make Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior? And being told, you know, you need to pray to receive him. So I went to my bedroom, knelt at my bedside, and prayed to receive Jesus Christ at the age of 9. So that began a long journey for me in the Christian life, in Christian circles, grew up in the church, ended up going to a Christian college, went to public school all my life until Christian college. And then 6 months after getting out of college, a church called me to come be their youth pastor. And I had not put out any resumes or any ideas. That wasn't my major. That wasn't what I was thinking. But I ended up being a youth pastor in Northern California. And ended up doing that for 28 years. And through that process, I came to realize that I can't be a youth pastor forever. Just ask Joe about the all-nighters, right, Joe? Still recovering from Fridays. And the week-long camps and things, it's harder and harder to recuperate from those things. So I started going back to seminary, and while I was at seminary, had the opportunity to take a class on the theology of worship. As I'm sitting there as a Christian, I've been a Christian for 30 plus years, and I'm listening to the professor do his class on theology of worship, and I realized I didn't know there was a theology to worship. How come I've never heard a pastor, I've never been to a conference, never been to a seminar, never had a Sunday school teacher talk about the theology of worship? And it was just, it totally changed my perspective on things. It even changed the way I was being a youth pastor. And I found that I was doing some things probably that I shouldn't have been doing and teaching students what worship means. Basically, in youth ministry, it's okay, music is worship. Okay, let's all stand and worship now, right? And we're guilty of that unconsciously, sometimes with the semantics and the words that we use, that we promote worship as being one thing and not the other. And so at one church, while I was going through this, we had the need to hire a new worship pastor. As if all the other pastors aren't worship pastors. And they put together a search committee to find this new guy who's going to come in and now teach us how to worship correctly. And just lead us into worshiping in the presence of God. So they came to the elder board with this document saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to find a guy that has these qualifications over here. And I looked at that in the elder meeting and I said, whoa, these are not the elements of worship that you have on your document. There's nothing in there about confession, adoration, thanksgiving, supplication, instruction. You know what was on that list was things like knows how to run a soundboard, plays piano, you know, those kind of things that we typically look at for a worship person. And so I said to the elder board, I said, we need to make sure that we have the correct theology on worship. So that led me to realizing that I needed to do that with my youth group. So I developed, based on a couple of books, Sacred Pathways by Gary Thomas, which you guys will get familiar with as we go through this, and a book called Christ-Centered Preaching by Brian Chappell. And based on those two books, I put together a retreat weekend for teenagers. And we would go away Friday night, and typically, if you're familiar with youth ministry, It'd be, you know, you show up and you have all the fireworks and the fun and the singing, right? And then you have a speaker and he gets you all riled up. And then, you know, you go to bed late and you get up early and you keep those kids tired so they don't create problems. And then you hit them again in the morning and get them singing when they just finished their breakfast. And you get them excited more. And then you go out and you play some games and you keep them busy. And you have them interacting with each other and making friendships and doing good stuff. And then you come back after dinner and you do some more singing. And you get the speaker up there again, and now they're all excited because they've already been excited by him twice and they want to hear what he has to say. And now he brings it home. And he hits you hard. And he makes you make a decision. He calls you to make a decision. And then Sunday morning, everybody goes to bed late again, and they get up Sunday. Oh, we gotta leave. We gotta pack up and get out of here. Oh, but before we do, what are we gonna do? We're gonna sing again. And we're gonna talk to you one more time about how to be when you get home. And then we're gonna let you go in the arms of Jesus. And I'm not saying that good things can't happen through that. But is that teaching students how to worship a holy God? And is that what worship's all about? So I recreated a weekend, or a Friday night, we did no singing. The only talk I did was I explained to them what we're going to do for the weekend and the fact that each one of us as individuals are called to worship Jesus Christ. But as we're going to see today, we all approach that differently. We all have our certain preferences. And so, just to round up that story, no singing Friday, no singing on Saturday. Sunday morning we get together after we've done all the stuff that we're going to talk about as we go, and I'm going to give you some opportunities to experience that as well. Some of the things that we did on the retreat. Some of you are helping me, and I appreciate that. Then Sunday morning, we would just sing. And you've never heard teenagers sing like that before. And they would come out and go, that was great. I really felt the presence of God. And that's what worship is about. Last week, Josh, you even said it when you were up front when you were leading worship, that worship is about being in the presence of God. And that's what we want to try to create. And so that's what we're going to discuss, and that's why having a theology of worship is important to us. So what we're going to do in the 6 weeks is this today, we're going to orient our worship. We're going to talk about what's really going on here. What are some things that we need to know before we start talking about the nuts and bolts. And then next week, I want to do some observation with you and identifying with you. Like I said before, what are the elements of worship? It's not, can somebody play guitar? That helps. It's a tool. But that's not an element of worship. And then week three, I'll actually give you the biblical theology of worship. We'll go through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, and we'll talk about What does it mean to have a theology of worship, and how does that affect us in our daily living, and how we are as a body of believers, and why we come together on Sunday morning? Okay, and then weeks 4 and 5 are about that retreat idea, about creating a sacred space for you. How do you connect to God? And so I have to break it down because there's 9 areas that we're going to go over. So we'll go over half of them the first week, week 4, and the second half, week 5. Thanks, Ken. And then week 6, we'll be talking about forms of worship or how culture affects worship and what are some of the things that we see happening in worship here in America with the evangelical church. So that's where we're going. So I hope you're on board with that. Is that okay that we do that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, I need you guys to do something with me. And when we talk about worship, well, that's the other thing I wanted to say. On this topic, I will probably offend every single person in here at some point or another. Because what I like for worship may not be what you like for worship. And what you think needs to be worship, I might say, well, no, that doesn't necessarily need to be worship. So, just know that we have our own self-perceptions. When we say the word worship, a word automatically pictures in your mind and you start getting the picture of that idea, that concept So to illustrate that, just play a game with me. I want you to, just for a second, clear your mind of every other thought. And I'm going to say one word, and I want you to let that word come into your mind, and you make a picture of that word. Okay, so can everybody clear their mind really quick for me? Some of you are really. So this is the word I want you to think about. The word is cake. Cake. Now, yeah. Now we all have different ideas of cake. How many of you thought of a vanilla cake with white frosting? Okay. Yeah, raise your hand high. Don't be embarrassed. That's a good cake.
Rainbow sprinkles.
Yeah. How many of you thought of chocolate cake with chocolate frosting? How many of you thought of red velvet cake? Does anybody like red velvet cake? Next time. Did anybody have a birthday this week? Maybe you were thinking of a birthday cake. Yeah. All right. There you go. Did anybody have a wedding recently or coming up? Were you thinking of a wedding cake? And this one's for the millennials. This is actually a cake. I haven't seen one of those in a long time, but yeah. Upside down cake. But this is an illustration of, we bring in our preconceptions, our ideas into the term. So when I talk to people and I say, hey, we're going to talk about worship, some people automatically go to music. Some people automatically go to the preacher and what he's preaching about. Some people go to other things based on their experiences, based on their culture. And so we need to understand that we have these self-generated perceptions that we have. And we also have our personal preferences. Worship is kind of like food for us. We have certain types of food that we like over other types of food. And so worship is like that. So David and Darlene May would like this dish. Okay, Ethiopian hospitality plate. Portugal, did you guys have something like this? In Portugal? No, no. Over there, that's another room. Another class. In Portugal, and then in Mexico. I don't know if you're catching on to this, but this is, you know, our missionaries in Israel. This is my family's favorite right here. South Korea, right? Different kind of food. And Poland, different kind of food. We have personal preferences, personal tastes, things that we like. So when we talk about worship, Joe's going to like one thing, and Tom's going to like a different thing. Okay? And we just have to come to the realization that we have these personal preferences. So how are we going to apply our theology to those personal preferences? How are we going to get past those things to know that we're doing what is really worship? And of course, right now, the most popular form of worship is this, Hillsong United. Now, there's a couple others, Evolve, and other things where they call you and come and say, hey, we're going to put together a boat tour. Come on a carnival worship cruise with us. Or come visit Israel, and we will worship. We'll worship as we go through Israel together. And my question is what's the theology of what they're doing? And is it really the biblical idea of worship? And so that's what's popular in the world right now. But some of us grew up with a more conservative type of worship. And you dress accordingly, and you act accordingly. And if you act wrong, you don't belong. Of course, there's other places where they like to get rid of the boundaries and say freedom is where it's at. There's a lot of mystery in God, and we need to allow mystery. And I understand that. But is that a good theology of worship? And then we have what's called the high church. And I don't want to call it low church, but high church. High church means there's just a high form and structure and orthodoxy to what they do. And so the Episcopal Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, all these other churches, the Catholic Church, those things would tend towards the high church. And they have these forms. And do they have anything that we can learn from them about worship? We'll see that next week. Maybe so. Of course, there's the differences of cultures. In Africa, their worship service is going to be different than here. In some places, the worship service, how long are they in Cambodia?
A couple hours.
Couple hours.
Sorry, Fletcher.
Yeah.
Everyone that gets up and gets introduced preaches a sermon. So.
Yeah, so it takes a long time. So worship, depending on where you're at, can be different. And depending on your theology, it could be dangerous. Is that really worship? And what's their theology behind what they're doing? And so we have all this bombarding us as we come as a group to try to drink from this fire hose that I'm giving you of having a theology of worship and why is it important. And so it is important because the body of Christ is the most visible activity on this earth. And so when we gather for a worship service, the world is seeing that activity. And the question is what are we proclaiming? And why are we doing what we're doing if that's the activity of the body of Christ? Is that what Christ wants us to do? We must get it right. It's important to God. And it seems like a lot of us don't. So we want to develop a theology of worship that is healthy. So we need to understand that worship can easily be driven by our own styles, tastes, and preferences. I'm guilty of that. Culture has a deeper grip on us than we realize. That if we were to take our worship to another culture, there'd be a lot of things that would be unacceptable. Worship is inherently theological, and a lot of people don't like to admit that. They just want, well, why can't we just worship Jesus? After all, it is primarily about God. And we are mandated to worship in spirit and in truth. So by the end of our time next week, I want to give you seven things that help us make sure that we're worshiping in spirit and truth. So that's why it's important for us. Sometimes it can seem like the gathering of the church to worship is almost like a club. It's a company of saints and martyrs that the nightclub just forgot to close. And we're just going to keep on going and worship the way we want to worship because we're having a good time at it. It makes us feel good. And so we must face the questions, are we worshiping the spirit or are we worshiping the spirit of our age? And that's a play on words. Spirit of our age may mean the spirit of the world that we live in, but it also may be a generational thing too, huh? So these aren't easy to answer questions. It's not that we can or should escape culture. We need to adapt. We must build a theological foundation, and God has much to say, as we're going to see, about worship, and there's an infinite vastness of God to be explored that we aren't even touching on here at CBC. I want that to just soak in for a minute. The way we worship at CBC, is there more to God than just what we've been experiencing? I would say yes, there is. Not that what we're doing is wrong. It's just there's more of God to be explored. And he's calling us to know him more and deeper. In fact, Jim said that last week in the sermon. Every single one of you here has capacity for deepening your intimate relationship with God. He said that in a sermon last Sunday. That's why a theology of worship is important. It's going to help us to do that. So I'm going to hopefully encourage you, especially you teenagers, to know that if worship is boring, it's not because God is boring. It's because church is boring. And a lot of that has to do with what is your theology of worship, even as a teenager, of why do you come to church? And what is it that we're supposed to do? So, now time's
Time. Your handout. What did I do with my copy? Here we go. On your handout, defining worship theologically, there's the Hebrew terms in the Bible right here, yishtahava, means to be brought low, to be humble, to prostrate oneself. We found several biblical examples of that. Or the word abad is also used as worship. Abad means to serve or to do the ministry or the labor of the tabernacle. And so we see in the Old Testament, we see this set of terms, and they underscore that worship is about honor. Worship is about honor. That's that first one, Hishtahawa. Sorry. It's about honor. It's about saying, God, we adore you. The reason why we're here is that we are going to find a place to make your name known and to glorify you. It's the act of glorifying God. In essence, it's taking a mundane act and making it holy. So that gathering on Sunday becomes a matter of what we should be doing all through our week. We should be honoring God. And then we gather together for a worship service to honor God. And that comes up in some other things later. But in the Greek, the three terms are proskuneo, to prostrate, to kiss towards, cast oneself on the ground at something or someone. Latreo, to serve or administering the rites. And then liturgos, to do a public work, a service to the people. And so the first term, proskuneo, connects to the first term in the Hebrew, hishtahawa. That's where you pay homage or you glorify, you give honor to, you adore. And it's the idea of to kiss towards means to throw yourself at, type of thing. When Sue and I were in Spain, we visited a Montserrat monastery, and that's famous for having the Black Madonna. And there's this line of people to get up to where they had it behind a cage, but Mary was holding Jesus in one arm and a globe in the other arm, and the globe was where you could bow down and kiss it. And people would prostrate themselves to that statue. That's the idea of to kiss towards, to prostrate, to pay homage to something. What they were doing was not right, because we're not supposed to do that to anybody but Jesus. But that's what the idea is. So, with the first set of terms, there's a recognition that God is sovereign over all of creation and that we are dependent upon him. And where there is a call to bow before his absolute authority. I love John Piper's quote there on the worksheet. If all of us did this, missions would not be necessary. And so we need to work at that. And the American church needs to work at that because for the most part, the American church's theology of worship is off. And so we need to get it back to what it needs to be. The second set of terms underscores that worship is about service. That's the second blank on your sheet. It's a great work of faithfulness and obedience. It's the action we do, not the passion we feel. Worship is the work of telling God how awesome he is. It's the work of sacrifice, not catering to our emotional needs, not asking the question, is everyone having fun? That's a blank on your worksheet there. That's the question. Under B, it's not about is everybody having fun. Is it okay to have fun? Is God against fun? No. No. But is a worship service the place where it's meant to be fun? No. Not necessarily. Can you have fun in a worship service?
Yes.
Sure. Okay. So a true liturgical service reflects a place where there is a mutual serving going on by individual participants, where we are immersed into something bigger than ourselves, something that requires us to bring all the gifts that we can bring. And the emotional is just incidental in worship. It's not the goal. Like I was saying about the youth retreat type thing, where sometimes that's the goal for the people, is to have them make an emotional response. That's not the goal. There are times where that's helpful. There are times where God does work through that. But is that the goal of coming to worship God, that I have an emotional response? Is worshiping God based upon whether or not I have a good emotional response? Are you familiar with Isaiah 6? Where Isaiah is given a glimpse of the Lord. Wait a minute. I thought nobody could see the Lord and live. Somehow, Isaiah is allowed to see the Lord. What is his response? Was it a good emotional response? No. It's, woe is me, I'm a sinner, and he falls down flat. But that was worship. And through that process, the good thing about it was that he was acceptable in God's presence. And actually something that logically for us would be terrifying and detrimental, the touching of a hot coal upon our lips would do what to us?
Burn.
It would burn and it would hurt and cause distress. Not for Isaiah. It caused healing and cleansing and acceptance. So it's not based upon getting an emotional response. Worshiping God is not based upon our emotional response. Oh boy, I really sure felt good going to that Mexican restaurant last night. I think I'll go there again. Well, I didn't like the way the waiter treated me at the South Korean restaurant last night. I'm not going to eat that food ever again. Is that the way we worship God? So, the first question we have to ask is, who is being worshipped? Yeah, we got time. Can I get somebody to read Psalms 96, 7 through 9? And while they're looking that up, can somebody look up Matthew 25? And it's Matthew 25, 35. Okay, somebody got Psalms 96, 7 through 9? Eric?
Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him all the earth.
So who's the worship supposed to be for? For God. It's for the Lord. Okay, it's for his name. Is, are we doing something that brings a good reputation to his name, that glorifies him? Okay? So, there's a couple of sub-questions we can ask to help us answer who is being worshipped, and that has to do with when we ask the question, have we actually worshipped, or do we just feel good about what just happened this morning? And so these two questions help us get back to that question of who is being worshipped, because it's taking the focus off of ourselves and moving it back onto God. So how we worship? Then the first one there, C, letter C, A. Did I reverence and adore God? When you ask the question, have I worshiped this morning? The question you have to ask is, did I reverence and adore God? Was I compelled to be emptied of myself, or was I more concerned about getting my own needs met and my feelings, and my preferences, and my taste, or did I actually come to worship God? God is seeking those who worship him in spirit and in truth, John 4:24. So the question I'm asking when I come is, did I adore God? Did I reverence or fear God in a healthy manner? Can we fear God in an unhealthy manner? Yeah, so we're going to have to be careful there. But it's a good question to ask. So it's being opposed to this idea of I was fulfilled. The songs were the songs I liked. The music was the way I liked it. The preacher spoke the way I would want him to speak. All those things are focusing on who? Not God. So sometimes we need some things to kind of break through our mindset and our preconceived notions And that's where liturgical forms can sometimes help. And so we're going to look at that next week. We're going to do a little look at the history of worship since the time of Christ all the way up till now. And we'll find that there's been six main stages of how worship has developed and what were some of the liturgical forms that we find that have been in all six of those stages. And it's interesting because at one point there was no Protestant church. There were no evangelicals. There weren't Baptists and Presbyterians and Lutherans and all that. So why do we have these things in common with how worship was done in the second century? Because these are forms that help people focus on God. And so that's why some people have more of a bent towards the liturgical, because it's helping them to focus on God. And if that's going to help my brother do that, I want him to do that. Maybe the way he's doing it doesn't help me, but if it's helping him, I want him to do that. So the second question is, did I serve God? Remember our terms for worship? Proskuneo was prostrating, falling down, but then litero and liturgikos were about working for other people. Matthew 25, 35 through 40. Anybody have that to read for us? Matthew 25, 35 through 40.
For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. When the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you as a stranger and invite you in? Or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer them and say, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did these to one of my brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me.
The service that you did to these people, you're doing to me. The whole chapter of 25 is about the kingdom of God and Jesus Christ saying, the kingdom of God is belonging to the people who serve me. And one of the ways that we serve Jesus is by serving his children. When you do something nice for my child as a parent, I'm excited about that. And so the term, the last of the three terms that we had up there, the Greek, liturgos, is a combination of the two words leos, meaning people, and ergon, where we get the word ergo, work, or energy from. So people work, people energy, serving the work of the people. So one of the ways that we come to worship God is by honoring him. The other way we come is by serving him through serving his people. That's why it can be a form of worship for Pat Butt to be with preschoolers on Sunday morning. And that's a form of worship. But you have to understand that there's worship has two axes, two grids, right? The horizontal is the honoring God. When we come together as the body of Christ, the parts of the body are supposed to all be doing the work, the people work, serving each other, and that's the horizontal. The vertical is God, horizontal is people. Sometimes we think of worship just strictly as this. And then sometimes we think of it strictly as this. And what we're going to find out is that worship is not authentically biblical unless it has both going on. As soon as Isaiah was cleansed from the coal, what did God ask? Whom will I send? Isaiah says, I'll go. And so we have to have both parts in order for biblical worship to be complete, to see how our theology comes into play. Oh, there's just so much. I'm trying to get it all into you. A couple quotes. I didn't even have time to put them on a slide. A couple quotes. D.A. Carson says, Worship is the proper response of all moral, sentient beings to God, ascribing all honor and worth to their creator God precisely because he is worthy. Another quote by a gentleman named Allen. Worship is an active response to what God declares in his word, whereby we declare his worth. Worship is basically call and response. I think I'll go over some of these next week. Worship can be summarized as revelation and response. That's kind of where we're going to land on that last week. And Michael Horton says, worship is dialogical. God speaks and we respond. Eric Weber says, worship springs from the story of God, delighting in God that comes from hearing his story and responding by participating in his purposes. And so there's a whole bunch of different points that we get from all this as we look at that. But worship is not just the singing. And it's not just, as long as I love Jesus. I don't know if you could read the words in the cartoon. They're in a worship service. I think it might be Hillsong United, but I don't know. It says, I love the music at your church. Who's this Jesus guy to sing about? And her response, I have no idea, but we've sung about him for years. Is it about the music? Is it about us feeling good? Or is it about us proclaiming the worthiness of God? And so it helps us to ask the question, what is the purpose of worship? And our answer would be, it is to glorify God. It helps us when we do that. It helps us to reorient our life. We are renouncing ourself and remembering who is leading who. It also helps us transform our life. It helps us to form our minds. When we look at the elements of worship next week, we'll see how it can help transform our minds and how preaching and being under the teaching of the word is actually helpful for us in having our worship be in the right place. And then it helps us to impact our culture. So it helps us to work through traditions and thoughts and feelings, and we can be more open to the work of God in our lives. As a body, as a whole, if the elders of the church change the way we do communion to having it more frequently than less frequently, is it okay for God to lead us that way? Is it possible that God's trying to teach us something? Is it possibly that God's trying to use a liturgical form to get us closer to him? Or do we have to do it a certain way because of the way it makes us feel? And change is hard. We don't like to change. So we'll talk about this later, and I think next week we'll talk about this, that we need to not let ceremonies be binding. We need to not let ceremonies be binding. And so that's one of the things that whole idea of communion more or less or whatever, that's where we get caught up in those personal preferences. And sometimes it has to do, the reason why we're feeling that way about the form of worship is because our hearts weren't in the right place when we came to worship anyways. And so this whole idea of theology of worship is important. So to close, the point of this is, we do not gather to initiate something, coming to God with our self-expressions, so much as we come to be confronted by God and then respond to God's presence. Is God here? Is he? Would a visitor walking through those doors go, God's here? The point, you thought there was just one point, didn't you? There is a vertical and horizontal axis. We talked about that. One without the other is not worship in its wholeness. That's why we need to be together on Sunday morning. Otherwise, you can just go off and do whatever you want. The point, it is a misnomer to call services worship if the purpose is to attract people rather than adore God. because then it becomes people-based, not God-based. And that's why we need to have a right theology of worship. Does that mean we purposely make it so it's hard for people to come and be comfortable? No. The point, last one for today. Worship is not bound by a particular place, time, or tradition. It can be anywhere and changes with times. Come back next week, and that's what we'll talk about now.